A dozen years have now passed since Oregon first heard of the Jordan Cove LNG project. What was first proposed as a liquefied natural gas import terminal and pipeline became a plan for an export terminal when the gas fracking boom hit. The federal government rejected Jordan Cove and its pipeline during the Obama administration. New administration, new attitude, new plan. A modified Jordan Cove is now planned for the water's edge near North Bend, and the plan includes a 230-mile pipeline running to the plant from the Klamath Basin. The whole project has many regulatory hurdles to clear, including a state of Oregon water quality permit. There is a comment period now open for that, and no doubt many comments being made. Today we hear from an opponent. We'll hear from the LNG people next week. Right now we hear from Sarah Westover, who is a community organizer with Rogue Climate. Sarah, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get your microphone open. Let's try this again. So thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
There you are. Okay. There have been other pipelines built in Western Oregon without the huge ongoing opposition. Why does this in particular, and it does seem to be more about the pipeline than the plant, bring out so much disapproval?
Well, this pipeline is not like domestic pipelines. This is a 36-inch in diameter pipeline that's being proposed to ship fracked gas overseas to Asia. This pipeline would cross nearly 500 waterways and 6 miles of wetlands, and it would cross the private property through eminent domain of nearly 600 individual landowners. In addition to that, this pipeline and the terminal would be the largest climate polluter in the entire state of Oregon. So we're not talking about the kinds of gas pipeline that come to your house and provide natural gas to your house. We're talking about massive and destructive project that serves no public interest in Oregon.
Because of the fact that the gas would be exported?
The gas would be exported. It would also, you know, it's going to be, Oregon is assuming all the risks. There's safety issues that come along with the pipeline. We're talking about highly explosive gas. We just saw a fracked gas pipeline explosion in the United States earlier, 2 weeks ago. And not only are there safety risks, there's obviously environmental risks, and there's very real social and human costs associated with putting this pipeline under nearly 500 waterways.
To come back to the issue of it as an export pipeline, it seems like the opposition was just as vociferous when it was envisioned as an import pipeline as well.
That's right. So it's not just about the fact it's an export pipeline. Again, the social and environmental impacts of this project are just too big. The pipeline itself would be huge. There'd be safety risks. It would go through private property. And we just don't have room for that in Oregon.
When you talk about Jordan Cove as Oregon's largest climate polluter, how? I mean, mm-hmm. what kinds of things are the emissions that we're talking about from plant or pipeline?
So we're talking about from extraction to combustion. This would be one of the largest, well, it would be the largest climate polluter in the state. So we know that the gas that's for this project would largely be coming from fracking fields in Canada and some from the interior west as well, places like Colorado. We know how destructive fracking is, and emissions are released at that point, the point of extraction. Leakage happens all the way throughout the pipeline route. And then, of course, when the gas is actually combusted and processed, then that's another source of fossil fuel emissions. So that's something that we're very worried about, too, is not only is this project a threat to private property and our waterways, but also would be a huge climate polluter. And we know that's one of our biggest threats.
So it sounds like, and when you consider the accounting for this, the emissions accounting, it's you're including everything. So any emission that happens at any point along the way of anything that ends up in that pipeline gets included. You're basically putting all the externalities in there.
Yeah, so it's from extraction to combustion, which is now a more reasonable way to calculate fossil fuel impacts. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what we're concerned about, is what will be the climate impacts of this project.
Let's pull these apart just a bit. And again, our guest is Sarah Westover, a community organizer for Rogue Climate, as we talk about the Jordan Cove LNG plant and pipeline proposal, which is up for a water quality permit with a comment period for the certification. This is through the state of Oregon, ending on July 21st. You can join the conversation here now on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so a couple of different things to pull apart here. We talked about the concerns about the climate and fracking. Now let's talk about the impacts to the environment from the areas the pipeline crosses.
Mm-hmm. So right now, there's an open comment period that's a joint comment period with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And these are key water quality permits that, if denied, could help stop the pipeline once and for all. This pipeline and terminal would have unprecedented impacts on our streams, on our wetlands, and of course in Coos Bay, where there would be, it would be the largest dredging project in Oregon's history. The DEQ has an obligation, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality has an obligation to uphold our state water quality standards, which means denying permits for this project, as they have for other LNG projects in Oregon in the past.
So when I think about the technology that's come along, though, for putting things like pipelines into the ground, there's lots of horizontal drilling, things like that. Is that not usable in this circumstance, or do you know?
Well, some of the project impacts, no matter how much technology has improved over the last however many years, could not be mitigated. In fact, that's why DEQ denied permits for the Bradwood LNG proposal that was proposed for the Columbia River not too many years ago. That was also an LNG project that had a similar construction, so a pipeline, a terminal, and it wouldn't be nearly as big as the Jordan Cove project. But DEQ said, no, this project does not stand up to our environmental standards because of water quality, because it would increase, the construction of the pipeline would increase sediment in the water, removing streamside trees would increase temperature of the water, and it would have unacceptable risks for our wildlife and the health of our streams and rivers. So they denied those permits. In fact, those permits have been denied in New York and Maryland and have been key in stopping other pipelines throughout the United States.
Is there anything that could be changed in the pipeline or plant as envisioned that would make it acceptable to you?
Well,
smaller diameter pipeline or anything like that?
The real problem is that the pipeline would cross 500 waterways, and there's not a lot of good ways to mitigate impacts to those waterways. So the company proposes using horizontal directional drilling, mm-hmm. Which has the potential, so it's essentially you take a big drill and you go under the river. The problem with that is that's been known to cause what we call frack outs, which is where the drill bit gets stuck in the riverbed and leaks a number of drilling lubricants and pollutants into the river. Just the construction itself causes a huge amount of sediment, which again gets into our drinking water supply, impacts wildlife and fish. The pipeline also would impact streams and rivers that are the source of 12 municipal water supplies. So this isn't just about streams and rivers and fish health. This has a very real human and social cost, and we need to fight back against a project that would pollute our drinking water supply.
So to return to the original question, I mean, there are gas pipelines built across Western Oregon. Anybody can go look at the map online and see how many of them are, and they cross streams.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine a lot of people are generally not aware they are there.
That's true. This would be Oregon's, again, this type of pipeline, because of the size and the length of the pipeline, it's 229 miles, would be one of the largest pipeline projects that we have in Oregon. So it's very different than doing a domestic gas pipeline. Also, the impacts in the bay is something that DEQ and U.S. Army Corps will be looking at, which, as I said, will be one of the largest dredging projects to ever happen in Oregon. Dredging in the bay would remove 5.7 million cubic yards of bay material, which would impact oysters and fishing, which a lot of people rely on for their jobs. So it's not just about impacts to streams and rivers. It's also about excavation in the bay.
To reset the clock just a bit, to let people know why we're talking about Jordan Cove again, when they do remember that it was denied mm-hmm. Its federal permit from FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, why is it back? Why is it a thing again?
Right. So organizations like Rogue Climate have been working as part of a regional coalition made of landowners, indigenous tribes, and conservation groups that have been fighting this project for 14 years. In 2016, the project was defeated when FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, denied permits. And their rationale was that the company couldn't prove a public need and that the impacts to landowners and rural communities was too great. And now the company has reapplied for applications under the Trump administration, seeking a more favorable review. But what's important to remember is that even if federal permits are approved, the state can and should deny this project. And that's why we're asking the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to deny permits for this pipeline.
Let's get clear on that part then, because supremacy of federal law being part of the Constitution, I mean, if the state says no, but the federal government says yes, it cannot happen?
Yes. Yeah, so this project needs a litany of permits, and it needs to acquire state, federal, and local permits. And if any of those key permits are denied, it cannot move forward. Oregon has its own set of environmental standards and laws, and the pipeline company would need to prove that they meet those standards.
Sarah Westover, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a community organizer with Rogue Climate based in the Rogue Valley. She is talking about the opposition of Rogue Climate and many other groups to the LNG pipeline and plant proposed for Coos Bay. It would be a liquefied natural gas export terminal, originally proposed as a liquefied natural gas import terminal at Jordan Cove on the north end of Coos Bay at North Bend. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about the opposition to the pipeline and plant. 800-838-3760 gets you here by phone, or you can send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the need for the plant being part of the reasoning that FERC cited in turning it down in 2015, and it seemed like that was a major issue, that there was no particular market or guarantee that there was somebody on the other end to buy the gas from this export terminal.
That was a part of the denial, was that the company couldn't prove that they had a market to actually export the gas. But the other really significant part of their denial was that they said this project is not in the public interest and that the impacts to rural communities and landowners outweighed any benefit that the project might have. So it was a two-pronged denial.
Let us take a call. Here is Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the LNG plant and pipeline with Sarah Westover from Rogue Climate.
Howdy.
Hi.
Our president has never met an energy project he hasn't liked. If he decides this is necessary for America's interests, can Oregon alone stop this?
All right, so if the federal government, particularly in the person of the president, decides this can happen, will the state of Oregon be able to stop it?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we've stopped LNG projects before. In the state of Oregon, as I mentioned, the Bradwood LNG terminal was denied by the it was defeated because the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality denied water quality permits. It said that the pipeline would create too much turbidity and sediment in the water, and it said that the risks it posed were unacceptable. So they denied it once. They should do it again.
So given, and let me get into Steve's zone here, too, if the state says no, is there even a point in the federal government going on? I mean, but neither process stops the other, it sounds like. Each have to reach their conclusions?
They happen concurrently, yeah. Usually, so the federal process is ongoing. They have an active application from the company. And at the same time, the company is applying for permits with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of State Lands, and the Department of Land Conservation, because they have to get a number of permits for water quality, for remove and fill, and also to seek compliance with the Coastal Zoning Management Act. So they happen at the same time, and we're hoping that the state really stands up and denies this project and upholds our environmental standards.
So this is one chance to comment. I imagine there are others as well, like on the FERC process when that gets up to speed, and you mentioned a few others right now. So are there opportunities to comment several times for people?
There will be, yes. The FERC process hasn't started yet. They're still asking the company for more information. But when they do, we'll certainly be reaching out to folks about that. Right now, we are trying to collect as many public comments as possible to the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to tell them to deny water quality permits for this project because it doesn't meet our standards. The deadline as of now is July 21st. We are asking folks to call DEQ and ask for an extension because 60 days is not long enough for the public to comment on 1,000-page application. Folks can check out our website at noLNGExports.org for more instructions on how to comment.
60 days may not be a lot to comment on a project that has never been heard of before, but I mean, 60 days for a project that has been widely publicized.
Well, remember, this is a new application. Mm-hmm. So a new application and a slightly modified pipeline route. So some folks who have in the past not been on the pipeline route now are. And this project could impact things like well water, agriculture. It could impact, recreational uses for folks. We have a strong ecotourism industry in Southern Oregon, and we want a chance for those business owners to weigh in, fishermen in the bay. It's really important for those folks to have a say and make sure that corporate interests aren't leading the development that happens in the state of Oregon.
So it sounds like what you seek is more than just no or hell no, but something with some factual basis to it as well. So you actually want people to read the documentation.
Absolutely. Well, we're actually having comment writing workshops that help folks to articulate what the impacts of the project are, but more importantly, to have them talk about how they would be impacted. So as I said earlier, this project could potentially impact the water supplies of 12 municipalities. And that's something that would be a huge human cost. So it's not just talking about, our wetlands and our streams, although that is important. It's also about drinking water. It's about how we use our water. Oregon, of course, is in drought. And part of the pipeline proposal is to use 15 million gallons of water for what we call hydrostatic testing. So essentially, the pipeline company needs to test for leaks. Once the pipeline is built, they would take 15 million gallons of clean water from the Klamath to pump through the pipeline and dump into the ocean. So is that a wise use of our water supply when we are in drought and potentially under restriction?
15. Now this makes sense because anybody who's ever installed gas pipe in their house knows you do the same thing. You put water in there and apply some pressure and see where it leaks. And if it doesn't leak, you're good up to a certain PSI level. So is that part of the water quality permit, diverting those 15 million gallons from the Klamath River?
Yes. So it's about water quality and it's about water use. So we have to address both of those things. Folks can also address in their comments recreational uses. So if going out onto the Klamath and fishing for salmon is part of your cultural heritage, say if you're part of an indigenous tribe, that could be something you comment on. If you go fishing on the Rogue River every year or rafting and are concerned about how construction would impact your ability to do that, then those are things you should comment on as well.
Yeah, Sarah Westover, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Rogue Climate. She's a community organizer and in opposition to the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline proposed to run to it, 230 miles from the Klamath Basin to North Bend. You mentioned a modified route proposed now for the pipeline. How much has it been changed from the last proposal?
Not terribly significantly. Most of the there are a few landowners who were impacted who no longer are. The biggest changes have happened on the bay as opposed to the actual pipeline crossing. But it's important to remember it's a new application. There are changes, and we need to get these permits denied on both the federal and the state level.
All right, you mentioned modified route. So was that in part due to responses from landowners to the original plan or just something else?
I think
that
it
made more sense financially to the companies.
It may have been partially in response to landowners, but I think, again, the major part that was shifted was on the bay because the company got a heads up from one of our state's agencies that that was their biggest concern was Haines Inlet and that they would not approve permits with the current configuration. So that's part of why they changed the proposal.
Now, one of the configuration changes I noticed is that there'd be no power plant proposed to be sitting there right next to the Jordan Cove export terminal if it should be built. Was that counted as a success for the people who opposed this, or is it nothing until you get this thing denied completely?
Well, you know, the energy or the liquefaction plant was only or the energy plant, excuse me, was only one piece of this project. And the risks still remain the same to our communities in terms of our water supply, in terms of the climate impacts, in terms of the risks of landowners who are fighting eminent domain, to indigenous tribes who oppose the pipeline project, including the Klamath, the Yurok, and the Karuk, who are California California tribes who are just downstream on the Klamath and are really worried about those impacts. So even though the pipeline proposal and the terminal proposal has changed slightly, the risks remain the same.
The concept of jobs always looms large in this, and this is why it has a lot of support, at least some support in the community in the general Coos Bay area on the Oregon coast, is that, you know, this is a place that has seen downturns in the timber industry and shipping as well. So a lot of good-paying jobs have just left and not come back, and tourism jobs haven't exactly given the same dollar impact for the time. What do you say to the people who say, well, this is really important because this brings jobs back to the Bay Area?
Yeah. Well, we understand the need for good jobs, and we support jobs for rural working folks. And that's why at Rural Climate, we support a just transition to clean energy jobs. We know that fossil fuels are a dying industry. They are really harmful to communities. But we do want to support those workers, which is why we think that we need to be moving towards clean energy jobs and a clean energy economy, and that we need to work together in solidarity for better solutions and not let an out-of-state corporation who's fueled mostly by greed, corporate greed, dictate what our communities look like. So I say, you know, for folks who are concerned about jobs, let's work together. Let's find different solutions and not create a false dichotomy that it's either, you know, clean water or jobs, because I think we can have both.
As I think about the development of the clean energy economy, though, it occurs to me that one of the transitions, though, is to natural gas away from coal. So you've got that going on in a lot of power plants within this country anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of the issue with that is that we know that fracked gas is not a good solution, is not a good transition fuel away from coal. In terms of the greenhouse gas impacts of fracked gas, which creates a lot of methane, it has 86 times the climate impact that coal does. So we really need to be shifting to renewables, to solar, to wind power, to hydrothermic. And that's actually one of the fastest growing fields in Oregon right now in terms of new industry and new jobs.
All right. So this is the argument against Jordan Cove and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline running to it. The water quality certification comment period for the state of Oregon DEQ and the Army Corps of Engineers, as Sarah Westover informs us, open until July 21st, although they are urging people to ask for a longer comment period. We'll be talking to George, I believe it's George Angerbauer, next week from the pipeline company. Sarah Westover is a community organizer with Rogue Climate. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.